Blog Talk Radio.
Howdy, boys and girls. Welcome to the show. It is Mud Toe at Midnight. I am your host, Mud Toe Sasquatch. Thank you for joining me. Now, let me get my commercial in right away. I'm on the With Insights channel of Blog Talk Radio. And our other shows on the channel include Iggy and Rosa's Intuitive Readings on Mondays at 6 p.m. That's Eastern Time. Then Jenny Seek in the Inner Voice Intuitive Hour on Tuesdays at 7 p.m. Heather Tapia in the Entrepreneurial Excellence Hour at 2 p.m. on Wednesdays. And there's me. Crazy guy that Iggy talked into doing a show at midnight on Fridays. That would be Mud Toe Sasquatch, and you're here with me now. Thank you for joining me. I'd like to talk to you, as usual. We'll talk a little bit about my blog that I posted today on mudtoesasquatch.com. But before we get to that, I'd like to talk about hubcaps. And the most of many of you out there probably know what a hubcap is. Well, most of you probably know what a hubcap is, but might not think the same way about them as I do, being of a different generation. But my generation and generations before, and probably at least one generation after, remember the hubcap as, you know, as people collected hubcaps. You know, people had, you know, just vast libraries of hubcaps, because hubcaps are replaceable. I'm kind of getting ahead of myself. I was going to talk a little bit about, it was only very recently for me that I learned that a wheel and a tire aren't the same thing. So the tire is the rubber thing, and a wheel is the thing that the rubber thing goes around. And then what tops that all off, of course, is that hubcap, which you could... sometimes you would hit a bump and they would pop off and you'd lose them forever. Sometimes you just get tired of them and you'd replace all four of them. And you could very easily do it by prying them off with a tire iron. You just get the tire iron in between the, I don't know what you would call it, but you could pry them off without hurting them at all. Well, when I had my flat tire here back in February, if you're listening to the show there, you probably remember I did a whole freaking show on that. I think actually I ended up doing two. But we had to get a new tire, and my father and I were trying to pry the old hubcap, to get the hubcap off the old tire, and they all come off. The new hubcaps are built into the rim. They don't come off like they used to. And it kind of upset me. I mean, that's just like another part of Americana loss. I mean, it must be, what I was about to say, it must be more efficient. What I mean is the car companies must make more money by building the hubcaps in. You know, now I guess they can sell you more hubcaps or sell you more maintenance time if you happen to want to have hubcaps repaired or replaced, or you have to get you have to buy the a factory tire from them, a new tire with a factory hubcap on it. So I've been driving around without a hubcap on that wheel, and the first person doesn't really matter with my car, it's so old anyway. But since then I've noticed there are an awful lot of cars driving around out there with one or more hubcaps missing. And I just never noticed it before. And it's often the passenger side front, which is the side I lost. So that maybe perhaps that's the most common tire for people to lose. I'm not exactly sure why that would be. But it's not always that. I'm noticing often it's that same spot where mine is missing. And some people are missing all four, some people miss two, but I'm noticing more and more. I'll see cars roll by, and I said, there's another one. That's another one with no hubcap. These are the things I think about when it's just too hot to think about something else. We have been struggling with a heat wave here in my city in the Midwest. I I complain a lot about the snow and the ice, but I would rather have the snow and the ice any day rather than the heat. I would. People say, "Oh, why don't you move? You know, you can move down south someplace and look for work." I can barely stand the heat we have here. I can't imagine living someplace like Georgia or Texas or Arizona or Southern California, all places that I've visited, and nice places to visit, but I wouldn't want to live there. Florida is another one. It's just so devastatingly hot in the summer. Haiti and the Dominican Republic and Hispaniola, that island that they share, it just seems like almost like you're closer to the sun. And I say that, people say, "Well, you are, because it's the equator." Well, you know, you are technically a little bit, you know, on 93, you're 2,000 miles on 93 million miles, 4,000 miles maybe on 93 million miles closer. It's, you know, less than a percent. Less than a tenth of a percent, I guess. Percent would be, 10% would be 9.3. Percent would be 930,000. 0.1% would be 93. Yeah, we're getting into thousands of a percent. So it's not, I don't think that can be the difference. It's something to do with, it's tied up with seasons, you know, and that tilt in the earth, the way it goes around. I probably knew it one time. They probably taught me in school why it is. It's so much hotter at the equator than at the ends of the earth. It probably has to do with the amount of time, you know, the average amount of time it spends in the sunshine would be my guess. So maybe I can't, and if you ever saw that special on television where they asked science teachers to explain things like that, and they were like way off their answers. They didn't know. The question was, what is it that causes seasons? What is it that causes the four seasons? And a lot of science teachers didn't explain it correctly. So anyway, that's my discussion of HealthGap. I hope you enjoyed it. What else shall we talk about? I am just so beat. The heat really kicks it out of me. I didn't even get out today. It kind of makes me mad. Yeah, I try to walk every day, but there was just no way I was going any place today. And I had to hang around anyway because my friend Iggy was coming over to do some work in the apartment. And so I had to hang out, and I was kind of glad to hang out. That I had an excuse to stay in my room with the air conditioner on. Probably hear humming in the background. See, I don't prepare for these shows. This is what happens. I came here, I was just at work. An hour ago, I was at work at the theater. And then I'm here trying to think of something to say. And there's always my blog. I can always fall back on that. But, you know, once I run out of things to talk about, when I get to the blog part of it, then I find myself really struggling to find anything that I really want to talk about. It's just, I don't like it. I know it hurts the show. It hurts quality of the show since I have been working so late on Friday night and not really having any sort of time to decompress before I get on the air with you guys. So I apologize for that. I am trying to keep you up to date on my life and all the wonderful, happy things that are happening in it. I think I'm doing a decent job of that. Gonna fade off here on you in a minute. Anyway, better start in on my blog then. Oh no, I do have an update. Okay, here we go. As I said, I was working tonight, and the famous young red-haired lady was there tonight to see the show. She's read my previous blog, you know who I'm talking about. And the substance of the update is that she is not infuriated with me. She's ignoring isn't the right word. There's a fancier word that I want. Almost had it. It's a word that the dog whisperer uses all the time. So it's when a dog doesn't, he's not paying attention to something. He's something, disregarding it. He's disregarding Oh, this is so much fun. She was disregarding me, I think, because I'm the same age as her father. But anyway, it was not some sort of pent-up rage or not pent-up rage, just regular old rage that came from my having written about her in my blog without asking her first. Even though I know there's no way she could know because she doesn't have any access to my blog and she doesn't know anybody who has any access to my blog. You know, that's not true. Just something to think of that. Anybody who types mudtoastsasquatch.com into their computer has access to my blog. I was thinking in terms of the my Facebook page, which is where the blog entries also appear, mudtoastsasquatch Facebook page. So go ahead and like me there if you'd like. I just know, she's not a friend, so she wouldn't have seen that, but not a Facebook friend, so she wouldn't have seen that. But she could be seeing my, you know, now my care starts all over again. I don't know how she would know to type mudtoastsasquatch into the computer and read it, unless it's someone else that I know was reading it and clued her in. But then this all seems moot, at least at the moment. She certainly does not seem to have seen what I wrote. I didn't write anything bad. What happened was, it seemed that the next time I saw her after I published the blog, she was kind of cold to me. You know, didn't look at me, didn't talk to me, and I had this sort of phobic reaction. So, my God, she saw the blog and she's mad. You know, there's a very little chance at all that she would have seen the blog. So it seems like those fears were unfounded, as most fears are. So, hopefully that will put your mind at ease. I know it's fine. My mind at ease, although it's a bit troubling to thought. The other reason I thought there was actually no way she could be reading my blog. In fact, there is a way she could be reading it. It's just, how would she know? Okay, so there's just a little bit of fright still left over. There's always going to be a little bit of fright to keep you, keep one on your toes, keep one interested, I guess, in life or whatever. So I wrote a blog this week, as I do every Friday, and you can find it, as I said, on mudtoastsasquatch.com or on the Mudto Sasquatch Facebook page. And I purposefully stayed away from the hot topics of the week, and I'm quite sure you know what I'm talking about. My only comment on those was made on my Facebook page, and I said, actually, I don't even think it was a Mudto Facebook page. I rarely make comments on there, and I probably should. I'm going about on my personal Facebook page, which if you only know me as Mudto, you probably wouldn't see. But anyway, I put a post saying, I find it interesting isn't the right word, but that's the word I used, interesting, that these things, which are terrible things that have happened, are garnering, you know, all kinds of, you know, people, lots of hand-wringing and lots of people shouting at each other. But when, you know, we have some 8 figures worth of people who live in poverty in the richest country in the world, it's somewhere between 20 and 45 million. I looked up a few numbers just to give a little bit. I always say 30. I don't know where I heard that number, so I figured I would look up a few just so I'd have it's a little bit safer ground. And I had a number of estimates of between 20 and 45 million. The 45 million is kind of a more liberal left-wing kind of estimate, and the 20 million is more of a conservative type estimate. So I figure 30 is in the ballpark, so here's a stick of that. You have 30 million people who have trouble feeding themselves, have trouble keeping roof over their heads, can't find a doctor, and so forth and so on. This is occurring in the richest country in the world, and that doesn't seem to concern any of us. You know, we're concerned about these other instances which are serious and are things that deserve discussion. But I feel like if we were to take care of the larger problems, a lot of the other problems would go, oh, larger is probably because it implies that the other problems are smaller, only in scale, not in importance. Let's say the fundamental problems, poverty and corruption are the fundamental problems. With those addressed, the problems that arise from that foundation wouldn't exist anymore. At least that's what I think. So I'm watching many of my Facebook friends, my brothers and sisters who are well-meaning, so worrying themselves out arguing these points when there's a much more efficient way to attack these problems. And, you know, I think that there are many people, certainly many influential people, who don't want the problems to go away because they're having a divided society. It works to their advantage. So that's all I have to say about those. So I didn't have anything. I didn't think that would make a particularly exciting blog post, so I didn't write one on that. Instead, I just happened to be thinking of something that happened to me when I was 11 years old. And I used to go during the summertime when it was scorching hot like this, and we would go visit one of two families. My father was in the army in Korea, well, first of all in Kansas, and then in Korea in the early 60s. And he maintained friendships with many of the people he served with, but there were two in particular, two families that we were closest to, because they lived, I guess they were neighbors down there in Kansas while the guys were all getting their training. And so it was us and the Petersons and the Frasers who were very close friends, and we would visit, you know, we'd rotate, you know, go to one family's house each summer, so, and then, you know, go the next summer, go to the next family's house. So each family got was on deck, you know, every once every 3 years. It kind of spread out that responsibility. And the Petersons lived in Somerset, Pennsylvania, which is now famous for that 9/11 plane crashing there. This was a long time before that. It's just a little town in western Pennsylvania. I don't know. I don't remember if I ever actually saw the town of Somerset. I know that the adults would go there from time to time to purchase their supplies and like that. I think the kids were largely left behind on those. At least I'd probably go down because I was pretty useless as a sort of moping pre-teenager, already disconnected from the world at the age of 11. But I went out there, and they had a few. Thing is, they had, by that time my brother was born, but he was only 2 years old. The other two families, the kids were all girls. And that was an unusual situation for me, because, you know, in my family at home, it's almost all boys. All my cousins and whatnot are almost all boys. There weren't a few girls that were dominated by male energy. And then to be in a space with the opposite energy, it was very disturbing to me, you know, at that time when I didn't know how to deal with it. I still don't deal with it very well, but at least now I recognize that I've entered sort of a different, I don't think sphere, I'm not sure why I want to say that. That's the word that's coming to me, is sphere. So I'm entering this different sort of energy sphere. Today I recognize that, and I adjust my own attitude, my own energy output accordingly. And, you know, of course, I didn't know anything about that stuff back then. So my my reaction was to be kind of an asshole. You know, I just wanted to get, I wanted to somehow prove, because girls were competitive to me. So in school, and having, you know, getting grades and so forth. So all of them, you may have the list of people with the top grades. It's usually me and about, you know, 20 girls. So I was competing with the girls for attention in the only realm where I was recently able to get that attention. I was effectively able to, I was effective at getting that education, that education, that attention. So here came all these girls, a couple of them who were older than me, and of course they were very dismissive. So I had to kind of try and call attention to myself. And they were, Lisa was the older one, and then Michelle was the other one, and they just devil me, you know, look for ways to make me look stupid. And I would just fall into the trap every time because they were a lot smarter than I was. I was trying to prove that I was smarter than them, or at least we could hang with them, and I ended up making a fool of myself. And so on this trip to Somerset when I was 11, I had made up my mind that I was going to disregard all female persons that I encountered. And I found, I don't remember much about the geography of that house, but I remember there was a room behind the kitchen where they were making root beer, homemade root beer. At least that's what they said it was. Now, it may have been a homemade adult beverage of some sort. I don't really know. They told me it was homemade root beer. But back in that room, which is kind of, it was a cooler room. You know, there was no air conditioning in that house. But, it was a cement-type room, and I don't know if that had anything to do with it, but it was cooler in there than it was in the rest of the house. And there were also some boxes of bric-a-brac. It was kind of a junk room. And I found a big box of books, and of course I was in heaven. I found a copy of The Invisible Man by H.G. Wells, so I just pull up in that room, and then we got books. And I was finally coaxed out by the adults and by the girls, so I was quite sure that there was another opportunity for them to do a boosting. So they had a motorbike, a small, you know, like big-sized motorbike. And they thought, yeah, I would like to try it out. And of course, I didn't, you know, not a big fan of broken bones. But then Michelle, who was the oldest of the Peterson girls, sort of dared me to do it. She would ride, and I could ride with her. She sort of dared me to ride shotgun with her on this motorbike. And they had a path. These girls had been riding for a long time. They'd worn a path out all along there, in front of their house and into the back and across their back foyer. It took a lot. It took a number of minutes to make the entire circuit. I'll bet it was probably more than a mile, maybe a mile and a half. I remember it took a long time to get all the way around. So I got on the back of this motorbike with Michelle. She's 14, I think. She was a few years older than I was. And so she was the boss, obviously. She was the boss thing. And I got on the back and held on to her waist, and man, she just took off like a bat out of hell, going around that house, around and around and around, you know, just waiting for me to holler uncle, you know, waiting for me to admit defeat. And then I think on like the third time around, we get a bump. We're not flying over the handlebars of that motorbike, and landed with a kerthump. And I never let go of her. You know, I had this sort of, what is it, the wrestling move where you got the suplex where you have the person around the waist. And so I was just, because I was like death. I was trying not to die. So I was just clutching onto this girl. And we hit the ground and laid there for a couple seconds. And she turned around and looked at me with this look on her face like, what the hell are you doing? Because I was still holding on to her. And incredible embarrassment just washed over me because I didn't, I mean, well, what the hell just happened? And I was quite sure she was going to paddle on me, at least to the other girls, if not to everybody else. But as far as I know, she never did. I mean, if she had, I'm sure they would have raked me over the coals for it thoroughly. But I had crossed a threshold is the only way I can describe it. That in those few instants, I had suddenly the female race was I wanted to be close to females. It was just like snapping your fingers. And I went from guy, you know, women ick, females ick, to females, I'd really like to hang with you guys. And we were sleeping. They had us out in an RV. So each of the adult couples could have their own bedroom. They had us out in an RV. My brother, he was two, so we got to sleep in the house. The rest of us were out back. It was me and these four girls. And then me, all of a sudden, with this, I hesitate, but sexuality is probably the correct term. You know, I didn't know that's what it was. I didn't know what I wanted to do with them. I knew that I knew that all of a sudden I felt differently about them. And it felt awkward for me to be in that RV with them. And me being the only male, and then so embarrassing to know that that my parents and their parents saw me as a sort of something. It's all right. He's a child. He can be in that RV with him, and it's not a problem. But already, I knew. I think I had a certain amount of sophistication above the age of 11, I just hadn't processed it. I knew that there was a difference between the way that that children of the opposite sex interacted and adults of the opposite sex interacted. If they were heterosexual, that was another level of it that didn't come in for me until later. I knew that there would be a problem if I started getting too close. If I started to, my fantasy was the phone that bumped with Michelle when she fell asleep. It was all real creepy stuff that can't happen now. But you know, I didn't mean anything by it. I didn't understand what all this new circuitry meant. What all these new patterns and flows of energy that had suddenly been opened up. I had no idea what they meant. Then there's sort of an interesting cap to the story. At least I think it's interesting. I had to leave a lot of stuff out. I mean, this could be like a longer story someday, like one of those 3,000 to 5,000 word stories that I'm putting together for my book. Because I found, you know, I usually try and keep my blog to 500 to 750 words, and this one is over 1,000. And I had to leave a lot of stuff out to get to 1,000. I sort of, you know, talked about what happened on the motorbike, and I talked about what happened, what didn't happen. Nothing happened in the video, just I was tortured by my thoughts. And then there's sort of a cap on what happened between Michelle and myself, which I wrote about in the blog. So I think I'm going to leave that for you. I won't scroll that for you. If you can go on montosasquatch.com. Called Somerset Story. That's what this week's blog is called. So you can go on there and find out for your little old self how that story ended. Now I managed to stretch that all the way out until the end of the program. Aren't you proud of me? Before it even got to where I had to make things too uncomfortable, talking about my 11-year-old sexuality. Thankfully for you, you shall not have to hear about that, at least not tonight. So I expect all of you to write me emails at mudtoesasquatch@gmail.com and thank me for not having to go down that dark road for you this week. We are out of time. I want to thank you for joining me. Please come back every week or whatever weeks you can. I'll be here rambling some more. That's all I can think of, which is good because I'm out of time. Have a lovely evening, and talk to you next week.